All right. Intern Dom has unintentionally sabotaged the show, and I'm glad for that. Everybody's angry with him, as they often are, this time for saying that Roger Staubach is in his top 10 all-time quarterbacks, and Terry Bradshaw isn't, or Staubach is just ahead of Bradshaw in the list.
Bradshaw did not make it. Staubach was at 7.
You are unbelievable. So I imagine this comes up because Art the other day, upon Ben being, he's going into the Steelers Hall of Honor, yes?
Yes.
Called him a top 10 quarterback of all time, which I happen to agree with, that Ben is a top 10 quarterback of all time. So now, before we get into, are the callers threatening you in any way, or are they just angry?
Some people seem pretty mild-mannered. Some people say they're going to school me and teach me a lesson.
Okay.
And I do want to make it very clear. I know that I'm 21 years old and didn't get to see these two
That's
play.
That's okay. So you have every right to have that opinion. I mean, I have opinions on all-time greatest running backs, and I'm going to put Jim Brown number one. Never saw him play live. That's okay.
Right.
We all have the tools, you know, with which to judge people from that era. We could probably go back and watch their games at this point with the technology that we have. So my top 10 quarterbacks in order. You ready for this, Dom? Let's go one by one.
Okay.
I didn't intend to go here today. Now Zangrilli is coming at me because he tweeted out this stuff.
Wonder who Zangrilli has in his top 10 quarterbacks of all time list.
I don't know. Now I'm texting him. Now he's angry with me. All right. Number one on my all-time quarterback list. A lot of people won't agree with me, but I'm vehement.
Oh,
adamant, I should
don't
say.
Don't do what I think you're going to do.
Jim Kelly? No, I'm not doing that. He's not even in my top 10.
Anybody but the obvious number one.
Yeah, John Elway.
Okay. Well, I guess your list has been validated or whatever.
Who's yours?
Tom Brady.
Okay. Would you like to know why I pick Elway number one?
Sure. Actually, yeah, I'm very curious.
Yeah, because I feel like, here's how I define it. If I had a game to save the world, which quarterback would I want? Well, there could be a variety of game conditions that day. And if I have John Elway, I have somebody that can not only engineer, you know, a conventional offense and stand back there in the pocket and pick you apart, but also run around like a maniac and make some of the greatest plays you've ever seen with one of the, if not the greatest arm you've ever seen. And he also, until he got the help, and then he won two Super Bowls in a row at the end of his career. Before that, I don't know that there's a player in history who took a team to a Super Bowl multiple times that was worse than those Broncos. He was unbelievable. How many Super Bowls did he get to before that?
Three. Three? And he lost all three.
Yeah, I know he lost all three because he was going against teams that were 20 times better than his.
Sure, but if you're the greatest quarterback of all time, like you're saying, you can't lose three straight Super Bowls and then only win two because you get Terrell Davis.
Well, yeah. Okay. Tell me a quarterback who didn't have great players around him who won bunches
Tom Brady
of Super Bowls.
Tom Brady won a couple Super Bowls with some iffy teams.
He also had the greatest coach of all time.
A coach that was overrated head coach.
They also cheated for another thing. Do you include that? Come on.
What, Deflategate?
Wait, not Deflategate.
What, Spygate? Well, that's his coach. It's not him.
I think it helped him.
Maybe to some degree, but you can't hold that against him all time.
No,
the guy won seven Super Bowls, and it was the clutchest player in the history of the game.
Tom Brady's number two on my list. Who's number two on yours?
Joe Montana. 4-0 in Super Bowls is hard to top.
See, you seem
Brady.
To be valuing Super Bowls a lot here, except when it comes to Bradshaw and Staubach. I've noticed that about your list so far.
It factors into it. I have Elway third on my list.
Wait, who do you have second?
Montana.
Okay, I have Patrick Mahomes third. Who do you have?
John Elway third.
Thank you. I have
Montana. Wow, you have Mahomes already up in the top three.
I mean, have you been watching football for the last 8 years?
Yeah, I mean, I also saw him get blown out in two Super Bowls.
You seem to be devaluing the idea of getting to a Super Bowl.
No, but
getting there is not easy. And he's won, how many, three? He's been to five. Has he won three?
Yeah, he beat the Eagles, he beat the Buccaneers, or the 49ers, and then, yeah, so three.
And then who?
The 49ers again in overtime.
Yeah, I'll take him. I mean, the guy's unbelievable. They've been to the AFC Championship game every year he's been their quarterback.
He also has a great team around him.
Here we go again.
I'm just trying to put it in perspective here.
I know.
Anyway.
I don't know. Does he have a great team around him?
Well, he had Tyreek Hill for a few seasons. He had Travis Kelce his entire career. He has a pretty good defense.
I mean, doesn't every team that wins a Super Bowl have good players?
Yes, but you got to put it in. I'm just putting things in perspective here. Who do you have it for?
Montana. Who do you?
Peyton Manning.
Okay. Who do you have at five?
Brett Favre.
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
that's way too high for Brett Favre.
Is it, though?
Yes,
guy retired with, like, every single
statistical
record.
Nobody in their right mind would put Brett Favre over Marino.
I think everybody in their right mind would.
Marino's number five on my list, Brett Favre. All right, who's number six for you?
I have Mahomes six.
I have Peyton Manning six.
Okay.
Who's number seven?
Dan Marino.
Aaron Rodgers for me.
Ooh, whoa. Aaron Rodgers making the list.
He didn't make your list?
No.
What?
By the way, I lied. Roger Staubach is eight on my list. Pardon
okay.
me.
That's okay.
Yeah.
But Rodgers has won four MVPs, my friend.
That's regular season. His postseason
career
is
so
shaky.
So you accentuate the I don't even know what you're talking about anymore.
What are you talking about? I'm being pretty consistent here.
Heavy emphasis on the postseason, except when it comes to Bradshaw beating Staubach twice head on.
I'm putting it in perspective here. Again, Eli Manning had two unbelievable postseason runs where he beat Hall of Fame quarterbacks. It doesn't write the whole story.
Yeah, but he didn't win four MVP awards. The fact that Aaron Rodgers is not near top 10 is way more outrageous than not having Bradshaw there. Anyway, number eight.
Staubach.
Ben.
Nine, I have Ben.
Okay. Nine, I have Bradshaw.
Hmm.
You have Ben?
Ben at nine, yes.
Okay, number 10, I have Favre.
See, Brett Favre at 10 is just ridiculous out of you. This person,
what about Brett Favre only winning one Super Bowl?
How about Brett Favre winning three straight MVPs? And should
How about
have won
Aaron Rodgers winning four MVPs?
Not in a row. Also, Brett Favre should have won at least one more Super Bowl in 2009, and he made a couple more championship games that were close. Number 10, I have Drew Brees.
You're moving the goalpost, Drew Brees.
Yeah.
The next two in for me are Staubach and Brees.
Rodgers would probably be right there. And then probably Bradshaw. And someone who I don't think gets enough recognition is Troy Aikman. Guy went 3-0 in Super Bowls.
Here we go with the Super Bowls again.
Joe, it's the
yeah,
most important game.
Yeah, he didn't have a good
game.
Team around him, just
about?
Michael Irvin and Emmitt Smith.
That's why he's not in my top 10. Super Bowls count for... See, you're doing... Let me just say something. You're doing what I hate that people
what?
Do.
What am I doing?
Because people try to take the opposite stance and say, oh, you're taking Super Bowls way too into account. Super Bowls mean something.
I know.
I get that some people
take... We started the whole conversation with Bradshaw over Staubach because of Super Bowls. Ever since then, you've emphasized Super Bowls. You de-emphasized it there.
No, you're de-emphasizing Super Bowls.
Elway had two, Brady, Mahomes, Montana.
John Elway lost three straight Super Bowls, three straight Super Bowls, and you have him number one. I'm saying Super Bowls count for more than some people make it out to be. I understand that they're not everything, and some people make it out to be everything, but it counts for something, and you're doing the stupid take of, well, Super Bowls don't mean everything. Yeah, Super Bowls mean something. I hate to say it.
Especially when it comes to tie-breaking between Bradshaw and Staubach.
It's not tie-breaking. I have Staubach 8. Terry Bradshaw's not in my top 10. That's not tie-breaking.
Okay, so you have Staubach emphatically over Bradshaw.
Yeah. Again, I'm sitting here. I know we
phones.
Have callers. So
Let's
I'm,
go to the phones.
I'm ready to learn. Vinny in Springdale.
Hello, Vinny.
Hey, Joe. How are you today?
Good. Yourself?
Great. Good to hear you today. I love you over Pump Pain Day, so Pump can stay home.
That's very unkind. I guess you're with intern Dom. He always rips Pump, too. We love Bob Pompiani. He's the most popular guy in town here, and he's also a very nice man, and I want him back.
Yes, he is a nice guy, but I'd rather listen to you than him. I want to know the criteria you guys did this. I was listening, and I hear going back and forth, but intern Dom, I don't know where – like, he's a smart kid. I listen to him. But I don't know how you don't have Terry Bradshaw in your top 10, because you say he takes Super Bowls into account, correct?
But I am. I can't figure out whether he is. He seems to move the goalposts with every one of his picks. Intern Dom, why do you pick Staubach over Bradshaw?
Yeah, so Vinny, here's what I would say, and then you can tell me your thoughts. Mm-hmm. I am not coughing at 4-0 in Super Bowls. I know that is remarkable. But you cannot deny that he was surrounded with maybe the best supporting cast in the history of football. And by the way, his stats aren't that great. He had a career touchdown to interception ratio of 212 to 210. That's not good. Like, we can't sit here and just ignore that. He was wildly inaccurate at times. I get that he had a cannon of an arm, but he also made some pretty stupid decisions. I am taking into account the record here in the postseason, but we also have to do eye test and look at the talent here.
Well, you can't do eye tests because you're not old enough to see those two, correct?
Okay, but I've done my research and I've watched highlights, Vinny. Do you know what happened? Vinny, okay. Let me ask you this, just yes or no.
Yeah.
Do you know what happened in the Civil War? Yes or no?
Okay, yes.
Were you around for the Civil War? Did you see it with your own eyes?
No.
No, but you still know what happened school. And you can still form an opinion.
You have to admit, Vinny, that's a pretty good argument.
I told you he's a smart kid.
So tell me why your case is for Bradshaw.
Well, my case for Bradshaw is because of his career. It was up and down. He fought. He was put in the corner. He had to come back, and he had to fight not only the coach, the city, and then football back then was so hard to play. And, yeah, he had great talent around him, but so did Staubach.
So did Staubach. You're exactly right about that.
I agree with you, though, on number one, Elway, the best all time.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Joe.
Dom, what do you have to say about that, and who's next?
I mean, again, I get the points that people are making, and I'm not trying to take away from Bradshaw and all the positives that come with him, but if we're going, listen, we're talking all time here. Like, we're talking the best of the best. You got to bring a little bit more to the table than, hey, he made a couple deep throws. Paul is in Washington, who, by the way, was
Wait a second. Wait a second.
What?
You're hurting yourself here.
No, I'm not.
You can make a case for Staubach. You could. He was really, really good. But you're really minimizing Bradshaw. A couple of deep throws. The guy was phenomenal in the clutch.
Understood. But
for years and years.
We're not comparing him all time to Kirk Cousins. We're comparing him to the best of the best. Paul in Washington.
How you doing there, Dom? Giuseppe, a pleasure as always. But intern Dom, I'm sorry, buddy. It's time for you to get your notebook out because you're about to get taken to school. Now, you need to have a talk with somebody that actually watched Terry Bradshaw play and listened to all the names Terry Bradshaw was called. Yeah, he threw a lot of interceptions, but you know what, Dom? He had to throw the damn ball down the field. He had to run out of the pocket. He took more hits than Tom Brady could ever think about getting hit. They changed the daggone game because of Terry Bradshaw and Mel Blount. I mean, Terry Bradshaw, to me, is the greatest quarterback in the history of the NFL.
This guy made throws that
the average man could not throw.
You know what his playoff record is, Dom?
Tom Brady was a cheat. He always was. He always will be. He never played football the way the game was supposed to play. And Chuck Knoll let Terry Bradshaw know, I'm the coach. You're the player. Do what the hell I say or you're going to be on the bench. But the unsung hero of that Steelers dynasty was Jefferson Street Joe Gillum. On any other team in any other decade, probably an MVP of the league. Have a good day, and I'll listen to your feed. Bye-bye.
That was incredible.
Oh, I hung up. I wanted to have a conversation.
Well, he hung up. What was Bradshaw's career playoff record, Dom, in 19 games?
I'm assuming
Wrong.
You know it.
14-5. What was his Super Bowl record?
4-0.
Wrong. 4-0.
I said 4-0.
A two-time.
Also, to say he's number one, I mean, Paul, let's you know, come back
he
to reality.
He was 14-5 in the playoffs, and as I've said, he wasn't dinking and dunking the ball down the field. He was making some of the greatest game-winning, Super Bowl-winning throws of all time. And people act like anybody could have gone in and played with those Steelers. No, it took a special guy to make those plays.
Let's play a quick game, Joe. You and me. We'll have some fun.
Yep.
I'm going to give you some names. You just tell me yes or no if you've ever heard of them, okay?
Yep.
Franco Harris.
Yep.
Lynn Swann.
Yep.
John Stallworth.
Yep.
Mike Webster.
Yep.
How about Joe Green?
Yeah.
Jack Ham?
Yep.
How about Jack Lambert?
Yeah.
Mel Blount?
Yep.
Chuck Knoll?
Yeah.
You've heard of all those guys?
Yeah.
You know where all those guys are, right?
Yeah.
They're in the Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
The best of the best.
Yep.
He was surrounded by simply the greatest team in the history of football. Again, not trying to discount him, but when we're having an all-time debate here, it factors into it. I also get that Roger Staubach was also on a very good team. But Terry Bradshaw was simply on the greatest team.
Those games,
and that helps him
those
out. Games you can't deny that.
Against the Cowboys came down to a couple of plays. Bradshaw made them. Staubach didn't. And I would ask you, you've heard of Tony Dorsett, yes?
Sure.
Hall of Fame. You've heard of Tom Landry?
I've heard of him.
Hall of Fame. You've heard of Gil Brandt, who helped put those teams together? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Hall of Fame. You've heard of Too Tall Jones and Randy White? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Hall of Fame. You've heard of Drew Pearson? Yes.
Yes.
Hall of Fame.
Was that team better than those Steelers teams? Take quarterback out of it. Which team had the better supporting cast?
Steelers, but not by a ton. And that's why those games were so competitive, and that's why they were essentially, in the end, decided by quarterback play.
Okay, fair. Again, I'm going to give you that, but I go back to the, you know, my argument I've been saying here. Eli beat Brady twice in a Super Bowl. It's not the end-all, be-all. It counts for something, but it doesn't count for everything.
Who's next?
Let's go to Jeff in Zelianople.
Hi, Jeff.
Hey, how you guys doing, man? Joe, time Dom's swimming in the deep waters here. We need to send him back to the kiddie pool, man.
You got to get that clip. Yeah.
Get back in the kiddie pool with him in the afternoon.
We have to put Dom, we have to put him in those little swimmies on his arms, those little inflatable swimmies, right?
There you go. You know, Rodgers' touchdown interception ratio is off the charts. Four MVPs. He's an onside kick recovery away from going to a Super Bowl where they would have destroyed Peyton Manning.
How is Aaron Rodgers not in your top 10 quarterbacks of all time?
Unbelievable. Send him back to the kiddie pool.
His playoff record isn't that great. He's 12-10, and post that Super Bowl run where he beat the Steelers, there's a lot of playoff disappointments there following great regular seasons.
Yeah. Okay.
By the way, he called the PM team the kiddie pool. I hope that didn't go missed, because that was funny. I enjoyed that.
We'll take one more.
All right, let's go to Lance in Penn Hills. He's been waiting a while.
Hello, Lance.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. Hey, the one thing that I wanted to point out was you guys aren't taking in the fact the Mel Blount rule that allowed the receivers nowadays can run down the field unimpeded.
I am taking that into account. In fact, I said that the Steelers' offense completely changed when the Mel Blount rule went into effect because suddenly it freed up their passing game and their receivers, and Terry Bradshaw took maximum advantage of that. And I'm not sure just any old quarterback could have and made the throws that he made. The Steelers went from a running team at the biggest moments to a passing team in the biggest moments because of the Mel Blount rule.
Right, I agree with that. But also, the interceptions were more during the Mel Blount era, I believe, for quarterbacks than it was afterwards.
Sure.
Because of the interference.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So.
And a guy, here's something for you. What's your first name again?
Lance.
Lance, here's something for you and me against intern Dom. How many interceptions did Roger Staubach throw in a 21-17 loss to the Steelers in the Super Bowl? Intern Dom, how many? Wrong. Three.
I thought it was three. Yeah, okay.
And how many did he throw in the next game against the Steelers? The great 35-31 win by the Steelers. Intern Dom? Wrong.
I think it was two.
One, but he threw two in the NFC title game that year. This guy was an interception machine in the playoffs, for God's sakes.
Well, they're both good quarterbacks, but I'm taking Terry Bradshaw all day.
Me too.
You got to measure those guys' heart as well, and his heart was probably the biggest.
He scored, I think, 35 touchdowns, something like that, on the ground. He was a maniacal runner. Now, Staubach was an incredible scrambler, too. Listen, in the end, and I appreciate the call, in the end, intern Dom, I don't think it's nuts to say what you're saying, but your minimizing of Bradshaw is reprehensible. There was also the next year, 1976, they lose to the Rams in a playoff game. How many touchdowns did Staubach throw in that game?
19.
Wrong. Zero. How many interceptions in that game?
19.
Wrong. Three. I rest my case.
Did you have Bradshaw above Ben in your ranking?
I had him just below.
Just below.
I fluctuated on that through the years because what that guy just said is right. When people go back and look at the numbers from the 70s, that's just silliness. The game, even after the Blunt Rule, was totally different. You didn't have the sophistication in your pass game. You didn't have the same type of coaching. You didn't have quarterbacks with quarterback coaches even. I mean, go look at some of the numbers. Give me a quarterback. Ken Anderson, Fran Tarkenton. Go back and look at any of those numbers from that era, and you're going to find guys with tons of interceptions and not tons of touchdowns because of the way the game was played. That's just a fact. I mean, Fran Tarkenton was one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. That's inarguable. Would you like to hear his interception numbers, Dom?
Go ahead.
17, 25, 15, 11, 11, 16, 19, 12, 12, 21, 13, 7, 12, 13, 8, 14. And to round out his career in 1978, Fran Tarkenton threw, 32 interceptions. May I rest my case? So please don't go back and bring up Terry Bradshaw's interceptions. Please don't.
How about a 52% career completion percentage?
Yeah.
You like that?
Yeah. How about,
I don't.
How about, see that? And so then he goes and does it. Then he goes up and brings up an irrelevant number.
The number of times you make a pass is irrelevant?
No.
It's the most relevant.
Dan Fouts is one of the greatest passers, pure passers of all time. You know what his career his career completion percentage was?
Wrong. What?
58%.
That's a lot better than 52.
58%. You know what his interceptions were? The great Dan Fouts. Him and John Jefferson used to do pass routes blindfolded. They were so on target. And they'd complete them. Here's his interceptions for his career. 13, 13, 10, 15, 20, 24, 24, 17, 11, 15, 17, 20, 22, 15. It was just a different game. What was Roger Staubach's completion percentage, I might add?
I don't know.
Of course you don't. 57%. That would be crap today.
Last time I checked, 57 is higher than 52.
Again, I know this is semantics. But they're sort of in the same ballpark, no?
Yes, but again, we're doing semantics here because this is a close
and
competition.
And he always had double-figure interceptions, too. Anyway, we have to go. Michael McHenry coming up. I have some Steeler training camp observations coming up as well, as we're just minutes away from them putting on the pads for the first time. And I'll tell you a couple of them. Is depth on the offensive line the single biggest concern with this team right now? Is Deshaun Elliott right for blaming the media on what he said about Aaron Rodgers and then attempted to clean it up? We already did Art calling Ben a top 10 quarterback of all time. We agree here. I assume you do too, given the town we're in. 412-928-9370. Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. The fan hotline presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years, and the text line on which you can communicate with our dear friend, intern Dom, who's ingratiating himself every single day, brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say, there's never a fee unless we get money for you. Putting on the pads here momentarily in Latrobe. Not that we're in Latrobe, we're in Greentree. But people like the Batconian Mongoose are certainly there, and our very own Jeff Hathorn. I'm assuming he's there. Who's there from our station? Do you know, Don?
I think Jeff is there today. I know he's going to be at Pitt tomorrow, but I'm assuming he is there today.
So here's some questions rolling through my cranium. And there's lots of them. Keanu Benton called his 2024 campaign, quote, subpar, and he wants to finish more plays. My take on that is good. I actually like to hear that from him. I've been hearing some delusional talk from people on that team. I don't think that Benton had the kind of year I expected. I don't think he had the kind of year they or he expected. He needs to be better. I picked him as their breakout player last year. Him and Harmon together on that line have a chance to be stars and to just wreak havoc. And he was not very noticeable last year. More to the point, you know, he'll make a splash play once in a while, but I just don't think that He occupies blocks and occupies space the way that you'd want somebody in the middle of your defense to do. I just don't think he was a difference maker. And at times, I thought he was a liability. So I'm glad that that's what he's saying. You?
Yes, I'm glad too. I mean, the defensive line, I think, is going to be one of the most crucial parts of this team going into the season on a defense that really could make or break things for this team. So that's exactly what you want to hear from him and from everybody on that line.
Number two, TJ Watt moving around the defense more, allegedly. And the idea that the schemes on both sides of the ball are going to be a little bit more complex this year. I like all of that, at least the idea of it. The implementation remains to be seen. It just makes sense that you would move Watt around more. I think Alex Highsmith could be primed for a pretty big season. I think he was hurt for a significant part of last year. But why wouldn't you, you know, want TJ going at the blind side of a quarterback once in a while, right? Just switch it up. You got a matchup, go for it. I like that. As far as the complexity of the schemes, we shall see. But I do like the idea of moving Watt. You?
Well, for $41 million a year, he should be, you know, working the concession stands. He should be refereeing maybe a quarter. He should be in the stands, I think, with the fans. He should be doing essentially everything he can for a contract that I thought was very much overpaid for. But I do agree with you. I think the more that they can utilize him any way that they can, particularly the blind spot, I'm shocked they don't do it more than they do. Yeah, I'm all for it.
That's intern Dom, in case you didn't know. Depth on the offensive line. And the offensive line in general could be the undoing of this team. And I'm starting with Broderick Jones there. Hurt already. We'll see if he's out there today. If he's not, then you start to think this could be an issue moving forward, because they already had a day off. If it's nothing, then it's nothing. And he's back out there today. If he's not, then it's something. Same with Seumalo, for that matter. And then, you know, we're looking at guys like Calvin Anderson. We're looking at Ron Cook's long-lost son, Dylan Cook. Who are we looking at then? I'm not saying there's a lot of offensive lines out there that are really deep, but this one seems particularly thin. And I don't even know if the starters in some cases are good. Broderick Jones gave up tons of sacks last year. Now he's allegedly at his right position, which is the left side, his natural position. And the assumption is he's going to be much better. I don't know that. I don't know about Troy Fatanu either. There just seems to be this idea that, oh, yeah, the Steelers, you know, got aggressive in drafting him. Said it was like Pouncey in training camp. Like, it's obvious. Just put him at his position and he's going to be ready to go. Great. The only thing I've seen so far was a very rough preseason game that he had, a rough debut, and then an injury not long after that. Are we just making the assumption he's going to be really, really good from the get-go? I don't know. You know, Joe Kopp manages. Does he manage a get-go right now, or a Sheets?
I don't know.
One of those places he manages. You remember him?
I've never met Joe Kopp.
No?
No.
He could have been a positive influence on your life. You should seek him out.
You think so?
Yeah.
Hmm.
O-line, big deal? I think so.
Huge deal. I think Aaron Rodgers is the single most important player this season. You could make a legitimate argument. Broderick Jones is number two. Zach Frazier is probably the biggest given on the offensive line at center. I don't trust Troy Fautanu as much as I could throw him. I don't really trust either guard. And how Broderick Jones...
I don't think you could throw him very far, but keep going.
That's the point. I don't trust him as far as I can throw him. That's the point of the saying, for God's sake.
Oh, yeah, you're right, actually, now that I think about that. But then, you couldn't. But the point is, you couldn't throw him at all.
Which means I can't trust him at all. And then how Broderick Jones adapts from the right side to the left side, it could determine the whole season, because, to be honest, Aaron Rodgers is, what, 40 years old right now? 41 years
41,
old?
41, and this is his age 42 season, because he turns 42 in December, I believe.
Correct. So how his blind side will be protected.
How do you know it's correct if you thought he was 40 to start out with?
I said 40 to 41.
Yeah.
You're going to play those games with me now?
Yeah. Keep going.
Broderick Jones will be very crucial this season, as will the whole offensive line.
I think they have a keeper in Zach Frazier. I really do. And I think people I trust say Fatanu's going to be good. I kind of need to see it. I'm sorry, but I need to see him play before I'm making that judgment. And then Broderick Jones, I have no confidence in. I just don't. Fan weather brought to you by Myers Law Group, Pittsburgh's choice for affordable legal solutions. Slight chance of rain this afternoon, partly cloudy all day. Sunny with a high of 90 and a low of Evgeny Malkin, 71 degrees. 50-minute mark on the Fan brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, Route 19 in Peters Township. Next question. Kyle Brandt, who I like very much. Do you?
I do, but he did something in that interview with Aaron Rodgers that I thought was, you know, kind of lame and unprofessional, but that's just me.
Oh, really? You think I'm not going to ask a follow-up? What did he do?
He did two things. First of all, he wore the Steelers jersey, which, like, come on, dude. We get it. You're at Latrobe.
So you think Crowley's unprofessional for wearing a West Virginia jersey in here?
No, I think they're two different gigs. Like, he's Kyle Brandt was supposed to be doing a legitimate professional interview, and you're wearing a jersey of the team. And then at the end of the interview, he's like, I think this is the best thrower of the football of all time. Like, you know, bootlicking Aaron Rodgers in the interview.
I really enjoy you. I do.
That didn't catch your eye at all?
It did. I saw both of them, and I hear you, but I mean, he's at Steeler training camp. He's having fun. He's got the jersey on.
I'm all for fun, but that's like if when you were interviewing Brian Bacco, you were like, you know, Brian, I got to say, you're the best writer of all time.
Maybe he believes that.
Bad luck.
Rodgers also said during that interview to Kyle Brandt, you thought I should have retired, didn't you? And Brandt didn't back down one bit. He said, yeah, I did.
I normally love Kyle Brandt. I think he's awesome. But those two things, I was like, you know, what are we doing?
Okay, fair enough. Anyway, I thought it was a good interview. And the Tomlin won the same. And he asked Tomlin what kind of value he puts into the non-losing streak, which even saying that is so cumbersome that it devalues it, just the name of it. It's not a winning streak. It's a non-losing streak. So Tomlin said, I doubt anyone cares, and I don't think that's not really something that's of value, he said. And then he finished it with the only thing the media, he said, I doubt anyone cares. It's just a nice, cool thing for you guys to talk about or use as an intro when you're talking about me or hope for my demise, which I thought was a great answer. That's fun. That's funny. That's the Mike Tomlin we need more of. Don't you agree?
Yes. First of all, Mike Tomlin would be an unbelievable broadcaster if he wanted to. I don't think he does want to be one, but I mean, my God, him calling games would be awesome. You know what I don't appreciate? That I think Pittsburgh sports fans are the best in the world, and I would argue that with anybody. The one thing I don't like that we have done, not me because I haven't done it, but you, Joe, everybody else at this station and everybody listening, I don't like how people have made the non-losing season record meaningless. Because people have rendered it meaningless, and it's now become a joke. And it means, we have. You're laughing right now because people have made it a joke.
I think because of the way you're phrasing this.
But it means something, and people have made it mean nothing around here. And that kind of bothers me.
Maybe that's a reaction to the national media making it the biggest story every time the Steelers play. What's a bigger story to you? The non-losing streak or the fact that Mike Tomlin has gone 8 years without having a team be competitive in a single playoff game?
Well, he hasn't had a quarterback for 8 years, to be fair. He had the end of Big Ben.
Have you heard of a guy named Ben?
He had the end of Big Ben. Big Ben did miss an entire season in that stretch when it was Mason the starter. Then he had Pickett. Then he had Mason again. Then he
why
had
did
Mitch.
He have Pickett?
Then he had Ross.
Why,
and then
why
he
did
had
he have
Fields.
Pickett?
I don't know.
Because he drafted him.
In the worst quarterback draft class of all time, he was
because
the only guy available.
Him. Why did he have Trubisky? Because he signed him. Why did he have Russell Wilson and Justin Fields? Because he brought them in.
Fair. I'm just, again, I like putting things in perspective, and I get that 8 years he hasn't won a playoff game. 8 years he also hasn't had a reliable guy at the most important position.
Which is his fault.
Partly his fault, sure.
Yeah.
Is it his fault that Big Ben probably had a couple years cut short of his career because of all the stuff he was dealing with injury-wise?
No, but it's certainly his fault that he put Matt Canada in charge of Big Ben.
Well, and then he did something that the Steelers never do and fired him mid-season.
You sure about that? Or was it Art Rooney?
I'm sure it was mostly art, but, you know, Tomlin was there too.
Too little, too late after he doubled and tripled down on Canada and brought him back for a third year after seeing his work for the first two?
Sure, although some people are now making the argument that that only went south because of the quarterback, and it had, you know, one hand holds the other.
That Matt Canada was actually good at what he did?
No, that Matt Canada was hindered because he didn't have a quarterback, and you could argue that Pickett was hindered because he didn't have an offensive coordinator. But the point is that two of them can be the same. Back to the original point that the Mike Tomlin non-losing season thing, which you ridiculed.
I didn't ridicule.
Yes, you did.
No, I did not ridicule it. It's a league, and I've said this about Tomlin many times. It's a league where everybody's trying to win. It's the only thing that matters. And he has won. That's impressive. But he's barely, for a long time now, I just mentioned earlier in the show, in the last 4 years, they're 38-32-1 with a minus 129 point differential. Tomlin has gone from a great coach in his first 4 or 5 years to a C-plus coach for a long time now, who has a major, major role in acquiring personnel on this team and developing players, obviously. And he's failing, and he's failed for a long time. So I don't care if they go to, like, there's not a huge difference between them going 9, whatever it was a few years ago. What was it, 9-7-1?
Yeah.
Or some ridiculous thing. He's had a couple of 8-8 years. And by the way, not every coach inherits a Super Bowl roster like he did. Not every coach walks into that situation. So I give him credit for winning more than he loses, but that's about all he's done for a long time now.
So what you're saying is Mike Tomlin, the GM, is a C-plus performer, and that I agree with, maybe even worse. Not necessarily the head coach, because those are two different things. GM is acquiring the talent. Coach is what do you do with that talent? Not a lot of talent that he has to work with, and yet he's still taking these teams and overachieving into the playoffs. Everybody, like, what's worse? Would you rather the Steelers don't make the playoffs?
He's taking the teams that he built, the rotten rosters in some ways that he has, into the playoffs.
GM Mike Tomlin.
Yeah.
Has underperformed. Agreed.
I mean, those are parts of his duties, right?
How about the fact
Coach Mike Tomlin has taken, I think he has a 6-game playoff losing streak.
Mm-hmm.
And in those games, his teams have been outscored 73-0 in the first quarter. Does that speak of good preparation going into those games?
No, not at all.
Thank you, Dom, and I rest my case. We have Mike McHenry coming up.
Actually, Michael McHenry texted me a little bit ago. He has some things that popped up, so he cannot be joining us in a little bit.
My God! Is that something you could have told me?
Joe,
it's 104.
Could you have texted me
after he texted you?
Joe, I swear to God.
Could you have whispered in my ear?
He texted me at 12:54, 10 minutes ago.
Yes.
And so I'm telling you now.
This is unbelievable.
It's not my fault. What you've done to me.
And on this show today, right from the beginning, when I walked in back there
at
9:24 and you were lounging on the black recliner back there watching Walter Payton highlights.
I have witnesses. For the record, I'm not trying to put blame on Austin. I know he's having a great vacation, and I do love Austin.
Yeah.
He texted me yesterday.
The YouTube commenters hate him, by the way.
Yeah, they do. But they can be negative sometimes, but they do hate Austin. It's kind of comical. He did text me yesterday and said,
yes,
McHenry is good for one tomorrow.
Oh, so now you're going to throw him under the bus.
No.
First of all, you should have texted McHenry.
I did.
A long time ago.
Joe, I did.
Show me the text during the brief intermission.
Over an hour ago, I said, hey, Michael, it's Dom DiTomaso with
the
fan.
We have to go.
Producing, are you still good with us?
I am going to go back to training camp then. And I want to talk more about Tomlin and then about Aaron Rodgers, who had a really interesting answer when he was asked about Omar Khan's assertion that the Steelers are built to be a Super Bowl contender. This was in the Kyle Brandt interview, and this leaped off the page, or maybe leapt, whatever one you prefer. Have I done all the reads this hour? Dom?
Yes, you have.
It's Bump and Joe.